Good morning and happy Monday, Value First Nation. Welcome to another episode of Value First AI Daily, your collaborative AI intelligence report. Here, recovering with Nick Alafakis after a week of in-person activity at Inbound 2025. Nico, it is good to be back with you behind the desk on a computer screen. I don't know how else to say it.
What's that?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing. Yes, definitely getting back into it. It's been a week. It's been a crazy week. We all had to travel back in time and then just hustle like crazy for a week and then travel forward in time and try to compress it all. As you can tell, my voice is still kind of recovering. But yeah, it was awesome to be able to talk tech for days on end, hours on end. And yet still the first thing I do as soon as I get back in the car with my wife is start talking about AI. So no, it was great. A lot of releases from HubSpot with AI related products, obviously. And then a lot of, it feels like at the same time, if I can feel the bubble that I was in for the few days, because I get back and look outside, as it were, and quite a lot has changed in the last week that is just going to take seemingly forever to catch up to. But yeah, otherwise doing all right, just trying to catch up.
Same. And there's no feedback like in-person feedback. Starting with the good stuff. Thanks to everybody who hollered at us about our content and appreciating what we're trying to do on a daily basis. Always feels good. There's really no other way, especially when relying on LinkedIn as a content engine. The difference between the in-person feedback and the LinkedIn engagement is just continues to widen. And that's why, something happened yesterday, which is like another nail in the coffin of why I don't trust any metrics on LinkedIn. Like, as I posted my interview with Dylan, like the app tells me that it failed the video. And then but also there's a notification above that that says it was successful. And it's like, we got to talk about AI breaking marketing. Like, it's just get out there, folks, and start adding value. But seeing everybody in person from that perspective is great. Also, from a more like what the vibe is right now perspective, it's easy to get excited about a bunch of updates, but it definitely felt. For me, it felt like the vibe in the room was, so what's next? What are we all doing right now? What's the next step? And we've been talking about this for a while. I think witnessing it in person, the gap was definitely another level, like not necessarily surprising at all, but the depth and breadth of it, about how far away, most people are. And like, even if they're putting on a smiley face, like the general vibe in the room is definitely uncertainty all over the place.
Yeah, I would agree. The opening, not just the opening keynote from Yamini, but the product launches, the announcements, everything that was getting made last year. It was funny that the opener, especially when it came to like talking about product and stuff like that, the crowd reaction to a lot of the announcements last year was like a little soft, and things didn't quite land where they had expected them to, you know, like, you know how it is, like either you're prepping a presentation or you're giving one, and you know that you have these pauses that you put in place so that you, because you figure like, oh, this is going to be a big reaction moment, so I'll put a little bit of time in here before I start my next statement, because, you know, people are probably going to be clapping and whatnot. Those felt real awkward, because like every pause was somewhat met with just crickets, and only a couple things were met with applause. And even with the applause, it wasn't like overwhelming applause. And I agree with you. I think that that echoes the statements from people that, you know, yeah, they are like, okay, cool, you have this thing, but what am I supposed to do with it? Almost. A sense of, I get this sense of, you know, we went from 2 years ago talking about how we were going to get our sales teams to input the data properly and this kind of stuff, right? And then you go to a demo of like, hey, your CRM's just doing all your stuff for you, right? And for people who hadn't been paying attention, even as far as last year, like you could have been complaining about this problem as far as last year, or like as soon as last year. And then a year later, all of a sudden you just see what looks like a CRM just living, right? And it's just living and breathing, doing its thing, filling in all the gaps where people aren't filling them in already. Yeah, I think for a lot of people that weren't really expecting that, it kind of just took them back and kind of, you know, made them think like, how am I supposed to go back and talk to my teams about this? And how do I explain this stuff to people? You know, I think one of the, look, these aren't, I want you guys to understand, these are not criticisms on HubSpot, because I'm looking forward to this same effect at Dreamforce, and I'm really sure it's going to be even more pronounced there than it is with the HubSpot crowd, because knowing Benioff, he's going to bite off more than he can chew and release something that absolutely nobody is ready for, and it is likely to cause backlash for Salesforce. By the way, Benioff just laid off another, 1,500 people or something like that?
Yeah, while we were there.
Yeah. So while we're out at HubSpot talking about like human, you know, human in the loop connection, Benioff is lopping 1,500 off the top of his list, right? And I mean, had no qualms, like just saying like, yeah, well, we don't need him because of AI. Right. I really do think that Mark Benioff represents everything that's wrong with marketing. I have been saying sales farce since I've been saying sales farce. The only time I say that properly is when I'm forced to, because like it might mean my job or something. Other than that, it's a farce, right? It's literally door to door steak knife salesman software, right?
They are the embodiment of the SaaS trap.
Yes.
And probably they created it. That's where the value first traps first came from. I started looking at the leads object and they introduced it and created this whole infrastructure. It's like, okay, we got leads. Now we need to qualify the leads. Let's get some SDRs. Let's build out a whole new organization to do that. We need more leads now, so we got to build ads and lead magnets. And we need a system to manage all this, so let's pay a bunch of people lots of money to maintain the system and call it managed services. And it's deep. And I'm with you there. And this is the kind of stuff, even from the admin perspective, why we don't want HubSpot admins to go the route of the Salesforce admin. Like, they built a well-oiled machine out of people. Now that the machine can think for itself, they don't need the people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So of course they're going to be cutting people. And as it all like kind of trims back, there was a number of times, especially as I, you know, rode around in Waymo.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Just a lot of insights there. So I'm glad it was in San Francisco for just that fact alone. But you start to think of all the, it's hard not to think of all the waste
mm-hmm.
that has been in play to build SaaS, you know, and AI is not here for it. It's not gonna nope. deliver. Like AI wants to deliver value to the user, like
right, but it needs
costs. And if it's,
you gotta work with it though, like you can't just, you know, oh, here you go, deployed, value, awesome. Like no, that the like the one thing. So you know why I say I'm trying not to be cruel about HubSpot, and to your point is like. Everybody's talking about, look, I'm just going to put this out there. Everybody is talking about deploying this stuff to save time, to cut time. Oh, man, because we need to save time on this and we need to save time on that. Okay, but talk about what you're doing with it, right? I'm getting real tired of hearing the time-saving talk, right? Again, I know I'm like a bit further ahead than most, but I don't care. I'm getting real tired of hearing the time-saving talk without the discussion behind it about what you're going to do with that time, right? Without the guidance, because now all you're doing is you're creating a hole and you're leaving it wide open for somebody else to fill in, right? And you're going to get these Benioff-like ideas that are going to come fill in these gaps instead of the, I don't know, the right thing, which is pretty, and like, I know how tough this one sounds, but the right thing, which is nothing. Nothing. You do nothing with the time, if not slightly more, but not a lot more, right? This, the idea of like, oh, cool. And what do I mean by this? Yeah, RevOps person. You implement whatever you do with your internal AI team, and you save this RevOps person an average of 4 hours a week. Maybe. Give them another half hour of work and let them keep the 3.5. That's like tops. You should really just let them keep the 4. Because I guarantee you the other work is the 36 that they're applying, it's gonna feel like they applied 46 or 50. Because the time that you gave them back, the quality right there, the value, that's the thing. If you tell your employees, I'm going to deploy this AI tool, that's the other conversation I got into. The two biggest conversations were, what do I do with it? And then what do I do with the time I've got left? Right? And to me, it's like just look at where you need to find the value, right? If you are worried about turnover, if you're worried about churn, if you're worried about revolving door, then don't fill in the time with more work, because that's clearly what's causing the problem to begin with, right? The value that you should be giving to your employee is time. So if you give them time back in their day, you also have to tell them, I'm not going to replace it with work. Otherwise, adoption goes down, because the assumption is the work is going to go up. Right. If you just say, oh, I'm going to do this thing, but you don't tell them why, it's never going to work.
The gap gets filled with anxiety.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Every time. I will say, like, instead of more, it just needs, this is why it's transformation, not optimization.
Right.
It cannot be more of the same rote, low value activities. Right.
Yeah.
Like the first go-to should be people time. Like if you're saving time on both sides, right? almost everybody in the customer org has things that they know for a fact are higher value activities that they've never been able to get to consistently, right? And usually that often is communication, like communication between teams and not just status updates, like strategic conversations without expected outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. Like just to be able to ideate and say, hey, this is on my mind. We just experienced this yesterday. What do you think about that? You know, sales, what do you think about that service? And not like it's hard to, I don't want to give you the, like, let's just have more meetings, like expectation either. This is like jam sessions, brainstorming that usually only happens once a quarter. Once a quarter is not even close to where you need to be right now. Like the one thing about the Loop marketing playbook that I appreciate, but will immediately get lost, is it's designed to be always on, right? Like it's an infinite loop, always moving, always on, always adapting. Like gotta HubSpot a little bit of credit here that they can't just sit back and say everything's fine and that nothing needs to change. And they've got to try and reframe it as the leader in marketing, right? They've got to make sure they like kind of hold that position. And I think they fell into the SaaS trap, like the way it was presented about you need to control all these things as an internal process, right? When in reality, like giving the buyers control, as always, the things that we talk about, like the more you do that, the more this stuff that you want to happen will happen, right? And, but the key is agility. Agility, and now that we have AI, scale. Like one person can do that. And now like you add each person on the same like wavelength, the same frequency, just consistently showing up and adding value and then learning from the value and then adding more value, adding different value. Like that's the system that they're delivering. And for marketing-led organizations, where marketing owns the entirety of the communication strategy of the business, internally and externally, they're going to crush it with this playbook. They probably already have been, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're in an SMB or a mid-market, most companies I've seen are product-led or sales-led or some other kind of led that's not marketing. And this is another, the risk is that this is another digital transformation situation where marketing was, okay, marketing, go do the digital transformation for us. Now it's going to be, okay, marketing, go do AI. Go do AI for us. It's like, nope, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. It never has worked, right? So I get where they're coming from. But as soon as you realize that the framework is designed for like marketing only, right? And I realized that as soon as I started trying to map every other like infinity framework diagram that actually covers the whole life cycle, right? Like you can't map it. And it actually like you got to imagine this loop marketing, which is really loop communication. You've got to imagine it at each stage of the journey. It could be different and it gets complex quickly, but I think it's indicative of the spot that SaaS companies are in. Like they've got to, they're not in a good spot. Like, especially when you're as good as HubSpot is at serving your customers, right? And the customers are the ones asking for time savings, asking for ROI calculations, asking for, please, dear Lord, let me hold on to my lead KPIs and my ads KPIs and my SEO. Oh no, SEO, what are we going to do? Oh, AEO. Woo. Whew. Saved by the bell. Like,
yeah.
No, folks.
I love it. Like the,
show up with value. AEO happens. Like,
right.
Right. Like, and by the way, I need to shout out Remington Bag at Impulse Creative, just because, like, I did research. I did a research study with Perplexity and ChatGPT and Claude. I need to do Gemini still, mm-hmm. but Impulse Creative was cited all over the place, right?
Really?
Like, and that's where this thing has been out like a week, right?
Yeah.
And like, if you just did that kind of research and got a little meta with it, like, you could deconstruct what's happening. Like, you just show up, find the thing that, you know, people are talking about. Again, it's not dramatically different. It's just the way that you talk about this stuff. There's no, like, you get to his articles and they're really valuable at trying to understand this framework. They're not just saying loop marketing everywhere and hoping to get surfaced. But in reality, there's probably not a ton of articles out there, you know, about it at this moment. So what does that represent? It represents agility, like, to be able to move that quick. And we've enjoyed the ability to, or the opportunity to watch George, you know, create content at scale on a dime. I'm learning little by little, but yeah, folks, like, if you can't see this as an enabler of you doing the things yourselves, like, it's inherently not designed to outsource, because outsourcing, like, the feedback loop when outsourcing is just bigger and longer than doing it yourself. And AI, so much of AI is that tangible learning curve when you were talking to the assistant, when you're interacting with the agent, like, more than ever before, if you're not there to respond, like, it's just not, it's not designed for the complexity of SaaS, folks. It's just not, right? That's why MCP is happening. That's why all these things are happening, that just cuts through the BS.
And it's, you know, if you guys, if you think that, we, you know, I know plenty of people don't necessarily think that we might make this stuff up, but I think a lot of people, don't understand, like, how many or what lengths we've gone to in order to sort of prove some of these things. When it comes to, like, specifically what helps with search. And so how are we supposed to deal with search, and what are we supposed to do with search now, and how do we show up in results and all this other stuff, and, like, what makes people show up in results and all this other stuff? You know, I can tell you that it is the same answer for everybody. So this is what's hilarious. To Chris's point, right? AEO, right? I'm asking Perplexity, Google, Venice AI, if you don't know what that is, GPT, kind of doesn't matter. Everybody has almost exactly the same answer, which is very much like, just know your shit. Basically, it's like, well, just, you know, have good content that's relevant to the question that's being asked, and you'll show up, right? Like, Google is saying, you know, there is no separate AIO markup, right? So there's no, like, AI overview or, like, AI mode tagging that you can use, right? There's no, like, hey, if I put these words in here, the agent will see these words and it'll pull this article. No, there's no bullshitting. It's over. Like, that's, I know it sounds so finite, and that's because it is. There's right. no, there is no sugarcoating. There's no, I don't have any way of making this easier for you. I don't know any way to make it easier for you. Literally every engine I'm looking at, high quality content, structured data, mobile. Here's one that I wish all of you would follow, seemingly have left by the wayside, mobile first design. I mean, for like the last decade, at least in the back of my mind, has been my old director who said mobile first or nothing. Because when it comes to design, the hardest thing to design for is the smallest surface area. As you get larger, it's easier. And I don't know how many websites, just the mobile experience is like the most garbage thing ever. It's almost as if you don't care that somebody is having to look at your site experience while they're on the go. Anyway, multimedia content, social media integration, and EAT. So there's the EAT principles, right? And this is echoed through every single result is EEAT. Experience, expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. Show me the metrics for those, please. Somebody go find me the numbers that add up experience, expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. Go ahead, marketing teams. Lose it, why don't you, for the next decade trying to figure that one out, right? Because you're not, like, you're just not. How do you measure experience and expertise? I mean, your experience is really what it is. How long have you been in the business? How long have you been in the industry? Your expertise, how much do you know? How great are you at what you know? How much of a talking head are you? How much do you lead your industry? Authoritativeness. Again, how much do you lead as opposed to following others? Do you write papers? Do you publish? Are you the one that's putting out content? Are you the one that's, you've got the videos, you've got the podcasts, you've got the episodes. People talk about it, right? And then trustworthiness. The fact that a lot of people source you, that you are referenced by a lot of people, that your name comes up in a lot of different places, right? That's how it's going to go from now on. The one who's most relevant in content to least relevant in content. And unfortunately, that means that you can't be big box anymore. I don't know if you guys are seeing it. I tried telling you guys a while back, you know, the whales, it's over, right? And why is it over for the whales? Because you're trying to talk to too many people. You're trying to talk to everyone. And because you're trying to talk to everyone, it turns out you can't talk to anyone. So when people are looking for a specific solution, they won't find you ever because you're not specific. You're generic, right? Like this stuff, this is what's happening now. We were telling you a while back that like, hey, being like hyper niche is what's going to be super important. And like, this is why, because now in the sea of irrelevancy, which is about to unfold, either you are relevant and you do know what you're talking about, or you're irrelevant and nobody cares.
And with that, we'll be back tomorrow to help you be relevant. Help you stop doing what you're doing. If you're marketing listening to this, put the foot down. You are not the eater, the EEAT person. Somebody else in your organization is. Get them on camera. Point them to these things. You cannot do it on their behalf. If you're anybody else in the org, look at this playbook, these things that are showing up about stuff not working and say, what can I do? What can I do to help the marketing team out? What questions do I need to ask the marketing team? How do I create more videos myself? How do I put myself out there? Experience and expertise. You must show it now, right? This is not on a one-to-one sales call, right? You've got to find a way to bring those calls that you're so good at closing because you know your shit. You've got to bring that out in the open so that AI can see it, so that the humans can see it. And the platform of HubSpot, these 200 updates, almost all of them are designed to help you do that. So we'll keep at it tomorrow. Until next time, have a great day, Nico.
You as well, Chris. See you guys.